Okay, if you look on the front page of epautos.com, epautos.com with Eric Peters' site, we have him on every Wednesday here. I love it. The six-figure V8, the guy with the lost look on his face, realizes he could have had a V8. And, of course, speaking of V8 vehicles, you know, that kind of thing, V8's just about gone right now. Isn't that something that you've been writing quite a lot about
here? Well, it was prompted by my test car du jour, which is a Mercedes S-Class, which, of course, is the top-of-the-line model in the Mercedes inventory. Mm-hmm. And this is a six-figure, top-of-the-line, full-size luxury car that no longer comes standard with a V8 engine.
Is it a V6? Is it a V6? Strong
V6? Yeah, turbocharged V6.
Okay.
You can still get a V8, you know, So I guess that's something. But a lot of the cars in this class, for example, the Audi A8, the Lexus LS500, they only come with six-cylinder engines now. And there was a time when you paid $50,000, you got at least a V6 and often a V8. And now the cars in the $50,000 class come with fours. And this is just spiraling ever downward to the worst-case scenario, which is the Chevy Malibu that I reviewed earlier in the week, that comes standard with a 1.5-liter engine that's almost a three-cylinder engine.
You know, I was going to ask you about that because I remember, was it back in the 90s that Subaru was selling a Justy, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. The Justy, the infamous Justy.
Yeah, the Justy with the three-cylinder engine. And wasn't there a Chevy, gosh, what was it, real tiny Metro, Chevy Metro or something
The Metro. Right, yeah. Exactly. But the point was those were intended to be extremely hyper-fuel-efficient little subcompact cars.
Right.
The Malibu is a mid-sized family car. It's the same size as a Camry or an Accord. Totally inappropriate to put an engine that small in a car that big and that heavy.
Isn't this why, and I was telling you the other week about there's a guy who has another YouTube channel that was taking apart a lot of these General Motors, and he wasn't just picking on GM. But he said that there are a lot of these 1.4 cylinder engines, 1.4 liter four cylinder engines that are just blowing up left and right in a lot of these General Motors cars because that seems to be like the standard size they're putting in, and they don't seem to be up to the strength of being hyper turbocharged to move around heavier cars. Right?
Well, they're under extreme pressure, literally. Some of these things are subjected to as much as 20 pounds of boost, which is a lot of pressure. Now, it's one thing to do that to a purpose-built high-performance engine in a high-performance car, which will usually be a light car, but they're using these little engines that are under a lot of pressure in these big, heavy cars, which can't get out of their own way unless you really hammer the gas to get the boost going, and that's very hard on the engine.
Yeah, indeed. And these people have talked about how, you and I have been talking and kind of throwing this out there. Gosh, is this going to be a great trend? You know, a lot of turbocharging in really small engines to put them in cars and in some cases trucks. I mean, we've been seeing that happening right now.
Yep.
Do we see any hyper turbocharged four cylinder trucks yet in the full size? Or are they still at least
in the half ton class? The Chevy Silverado comes standard with a turbocharged four cylinder engine.
A four cylinder engine. Okay.
In a half ton truck.
Oh, boy. What kind of towing capability do you have with that, I guess?
Essentially nil. I don't know what they rate the thing for, but I certainly wouldn't tow it, much less even buy the thing.
Yeah.
What we're dealing with here is kind of shrinkage. You know how you'll go out, a good example of this, I went to the store the other day and I got some of these microwave burritos that I like. The package is still the same size, but when you open it up, there's only half the burrito in there.
Yep. It's Biden shrinkage. Bidenflation is what we've been...
And it's happening under the hood. Now, you know, you'd think, okay, they're giving us less. Maybe we ought to pay less. But if you look at the sticker, we're paying more for less.
So, realizes he could have had a V8, the six-figure V8. Yeah, I think you'd enjoy the read, folks. Go to epautos.com on that. A couple of articles that you ended up bringing up, and this having to do with the EV. And we've had a lot to say about EVs because of the lack of practicality in daily driving, but yet it's being force-fed. And the other day, you got on your Kawasaki KZ. Mm-hmm. And how old is that? What, 76 Kawasaki KZ?
Yeah, so it's pushing 50 years old, and it's still, you can throw a leg over and ride it. You know, because the engine will last practically forever, unlike the battery in the electric car. And the thing that I harped on in the article, too, was the environmental issue. You know, every once in a while, you have to replace the battery in a bike like that or a car that's not electric. But the battery in that thing only weighs a few pounds. And even if I've replaced, I don't know, let's say 10 batteries over the last 46 years, I haven't owned it that long, but let's just hypothesize, still maybe 100 pounds. of caustic materials that won't get raped out of the earth or dumped back into the earth, unlike the 1,000-plus pounds of caustic materials that goes into making a single electric car battery pack, which absolutely will not last even half 46 years.
I think that there's just such a... I look at the electric car situation right now much as I do the COVID-19 vaccine situation, too.
It's
like people do not... It's like there is such a religion connected to both, I think, at this point. Nobody wants to see the reality-based thinking of what it's really doing or not doing, as the case might be.
Well, and to be fair, I think the average person who's not a gearhead, who doesn't really look into this stuff, isn't familiar with the technology, doesn't know because they haven't been told. It hasn't been explained to them. The general press, and this includes the automotive press, simply touts all of the eco-friendliness of electric cars, does not point out any of the functional liabilities, doesn't raise any questions about the wisdom of hauling 1,000 pounds of caustic materials out of the earth and putting them into an electric car battery that may last maybe 7 or 8 years before you have to replace the thing. By the way, I went to Tesla's website the other day, and the battery comes with a warranty that says, they'll replace it if it loses 30% range before 8 years have gone by.
Could you imagine if you tried to sell a internal combustion engine saying, oh, by the way, your mileage would go down 30% within eight years,
Or even 5%. Remember a couple of years ago, Hyundai got into some trouble because the touted mileage numbers, which amounts to the same thing that they were advertising the car would deliver, I think it was the Sonata, turned out to be about 2 or 3 miles per gallon on the high side.
Mm-hmm.
And they got in lots of trouble for misrepresenting the car in that manner. So you can imagine what would happen if you bought any other car that wasn't electric, and after a few years, all of a sudden, it was only going 95% as far as it went when you first bought it.
Isn't that what they call the mile per gallon equivalent, like MPGE? Isn't that what they're...
Yeah, boy, and that is so obfuscatory, to use a big word. Nobody understands what that means. There really is no way to draw that equivalence, but they've done it in such a way as to make it sound really great. You look at the stats of an electric car, and it'll say something like, oh, it's 124 miles per gallon E. Nifty. That sounds wonderful, since my car only gets 30 miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not correlative at all. If you look at the reality of it, it's a dishonest marketing ploy to try to get people to think that this is a benefit to them when it's not.
I'm speaking with Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. We'll grab a call here and see if they have an interesting question or comment. Hello, you're on. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Don.
Hello, Don. Now, Don, you're a mechanic, an actual mechanic. You work on cars, just so people know. All right?
Yes. Hi. That's how I serve humanity. But other than that, I want to think outside the box for a moment.
Okay.
And Eric, thank you for thinking outside the box.
My pleasure, Don. I do my best.
How about a car that has been being manufactured in Luxembourg and France for a dozen years? It doesn't require the mega batteries, lithium ion, that have a limited life. This car can be charged in 3 minutes to four and go 200 kilometers. It's a pneumatic car. It has zero emissions.
Yep.
And they manufacture. 100 years ago, we were using compressed air locomotives in mines. They can go all day without charging. The tanks on these new pneumatic cars are composites, so that if there's a collision, an explosion, there's no shrapnel. Mm-hmm. And the dead weight of the lithium-ion battery is always with you, whether it's charged or not. You're still
using it
to accelerate from a stop, and it's a high cost. It represents an environmental nightmare. But people can't think outside the media.
I really appreciate it. That's a great comment. I was not really familiar with those. And by the way, thank you for the call there, Don. Eric, is anything you ever looked into the I thought that India had some pneumatically powered cars that they were trying to.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the kinds of cars the caller is referencing.
Okay.
And the short answer, the reason why you don't hear about them is because they do work. This is another way to give people an alternative form of transportation, particularly for relatively short-range type transportation situations where they'd be ideal. Just like there are electric cars that are very lightweight. They're not high performance, but they're lightweight and they're very efficient, that you can get in countries like, of all places, China, as the Orange Man would say, for around $5,000 that are perfectly suited to, you know, like a teenager or a young person who hasn't got a lot of money and maybe just needs to be able to go, you know, the 15 miles down the road to their school or their first job or whatever, and not have a debt albatross chained around their neck. There's so many examples of this. You look at plug-in hybrids, for example. The Chevy Volt is an excellent example.
Indeed.
It worked. You know, you have technology that works, that solves. If you believe in climate change and all these supposed problems, these things address that without debilitating people with crippling cost and functional problems. But we're not allowed to have them. Why? Because they do work. They don't want them to work. What they want is to get us out of cars. This whole electric car thing isn't about getting people into electric cars.
It's about herding people into the cities. I think it's about herding people into cities is what this is all about.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's an element of it.
Mm-hmm. Eric Peters, epautos.com, by the way. One more thing we wanted to mention, and we're sorry to bang the electric car like the cheap gong that we think it is, except it's not a very cheap gong. It's a very expensive gong. But you have an article which is another wrinkle, and given the fact that the liberal intelligentsia especially are absolutely in love with the electric car religion, right? I think there's a lot of that. There's a lot of conservatives too. I'm not saying it's all politics, but there is a bit of politics and some political choices in it. I'm virtue signaling. I have my Tesla without my front without my front license plate because my car looks cooler without a front license plate, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that you hear out of the liberal intelligentsia, though, is concern about electromagnetic pollution. And I'm surprised that we haven't heard more about this until now. You have an article up on epautos.com entitled "The Electric Convection Oven." Now,
I enjoy that.
I saw that. I'm going, what the hell is he talking about? So I had to click on it. All right, so I click on it last night, and it has to do with people suing over electromagnetics in all the electronics in these cars. Tell us about that. It's fascinating. I haven't heard about this till now.
Yeah, well, there's a man that's suing Nissan over supposed EMF, excessive EMF emissions. I love using that word against the left, that are emanating from these electric cars, which, of course, you know, electric batteries, electric motors, these things do produce these fields. And interestingly enough, you know, the EPA doesn't regulate those emissions. Oh, no. You know, there's no standard saying how much of that is too much. And I found a couple of videos where people took tools to register the EMF fields around these cars. And lo and behold, you know, there is a fair amount of EMF radiation coming out of these things. And I don't know, because it's not my area, whether these things actually do cause health repercussions. But I find it fascinating that, you know, there's just this insouciance, this lack of interest in this threat to our safety on the part of the regulatory apparatus that sometimes will be so very concerned about our safety.
Now, you know what's going on here, too, is that a lot of concern has been out there about cell phone radiation and the various and the Wi-Fi radiation and the ultra-high UHF and super high-frequency radiation everywhere. Society is being bathed in it, 5G, 11G. I mean, it's all out there.
Yep.
And the United States is amazingly incurious about such matters, but Sweden apparently is not, right? Isn't that something you write about in this article, that they actually have a standard?
No, I was looking into it to see whether there was any kind of standard, you know, associated with these things. And there is something called the Swedish standard. In Sweden, they require that that devices such as screens in a TV or a computer be limited to no more than 2 milligauss of EMF radiation. And we also know, you know, this is common that people tell you, cell phone manufacturers tell you, you know, don't put the cell phone right up against your head. You know, you put it on speaker. And what does that imply? You know, I mean, I think it's certainly something that bears looking into, particularly given this religious mania obsession about the emissions of cars that hardly produce any emissions at all.
Yeah, but I guess the thing about electromagnetic radiation is that, much like the carbon emission, they can't see it, right?
Well, sure. You know, when you go back to, you know, the dark days of 1970, you know, you could look up in the sky and see there was an air pollution problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was incontestable. So it made sense to people. It seemed reasonable. Okay, we have to do something about this.
And and you remember being behind cars, and when I'm behind a vintage car from the 1960s or so, and you smell the raw gasoline in the exhaust,
sure.
right? Yeah, It's like it's good what has happened, what we did to keep raw gas and those kind of fumes and actually burn cleanly. Nothing wrong with that. But now it's like
I don't think any reasonable person objects to reasonable measures, you know, when you've got a legitimate real problem. My objection is to confecting a problem, you know, and then imposing massive, very real costs on people in the name of ameliorating this confected problem.
We'll be back with Eric Peters, EP Autos. If you can hang on for another quick segment here, Eric.
Sure.
Grab some calls for you. I think it's going to be really interesting. 657.
Batteries Plus.
And FM 1067. KMED.
KMED Medford, KCMD Grants Pass, Shade Before 7 o'clock. I'm with Eric Peters on Wheels Up Wednesday. We take your calls and questions and comments. And Wild Sam and Steve, you have a great one. You got an email from Pacific Power, the power delivery source around here in Southern Oregon and Northern California, and they were virtue shaming you this morning, right?
Yeah, well, I got it yesterday. They were saying how much electricity I used and compared to people, I don't know what people, I'm using way more than I should be. And they come up with all these things that I could do, which is not possible. But at the bottom of the email, it says, have you considered an EV?
How do you like that, Eric? Huh?
I love it, particularly, you know, Bill and I were talking off the air about the fact that in China, Tesla has had to temporarily turn off its superchargers because there's not enough power. They're having power outages in China.
Huh. So they're shaming you on one hand for using air conditioning. So using lots of power for air conditioning is bad to stay alive, but using lots of power for your EV is okay. Is that it, Steve?
That's exactly it. And I had to laugh when I read it. And it's kind of like you can't believe your lying eyes, you know?
I know. Appreciate the call. Good call. Let me grab one more here before we take off. Dennis, you wanted to say hi to Eric. Go right ahead. Dennis in Grants Pass.
Hey, Eric. Hey, I just wanted to say thank you. I heard you talking about Toyota Corollas a while back. I read your review on your webpage. And I just bought my first brand-new car. I'm 66. And I pretty much bought that Toyota Corolla. I bought an SE. Pretty much sight unseen on your recommendation. And you know what? I'm happy as a clam. It's a beautiful machine, and it drives wonderfully. It's a great value. I can't believe it's priced what it is. And I just want to say thanks. Plus, it looks hot. It's a cool-looking
car.
Well,
I'm happy to help, and I applaud your purchase. It is one of the finest cars that you can get right now. Particularly, I hate to use the term for the money because that's unfair to the car. I think you get a lot more for your money than is indicated. It's actually a viable family car, which is ironic because you'd think, oh, this is a smaller car, but its interior dimensions are quite adequate for most families, you know, unless you've got a really big family. It's a pleasure to drive. It's free of a lot of the most obnoxious driver assistance technology, so I can't say enough that's good about that car. And by the way, if you need something a little bigger, its bigger brother, the Camry, is also an excellent choice.
Appreciate the call
Okay, thank you.
All right, Dennis, good hearing from you. And now you're reviewing this week here the 2023 Chevy Malibu. Now, is this probably going to be the last car that General Motors puts out?
Well, it is. You know, there are no other cars in General Motors' lineup other than the Corvette and the Camaro. And by the way, it looks like the Camaro is gone after 2025, so that leaves Corvette. Malibu is on life support, which is just tragic because it's a good car in every way except what's under the hood. They've eliminated the formerly optional engine, and so now all you can get in this thing is a 1.5-liter engine that makes 160 horsepower to haul more than 3,000 pounds of car. And it's not just that it's slow. That wouldn't be objectionable by itself. I'd be worried about how long that little engine is going to last trying to pull a 3,000-plus-pound car.
Now, is it because of the size of the engine? Because I'm thinking about, you know me, I've got the old PT Cruiser, right?
Yep.
150 horsepower, but it's 150 horsepower out of a 2.4-liter engine.
That's right.
And I think they seem to be pretty durable. I've had very great experience with it. Really?
Yeah, and your PT is not a particularly heavy car, so the engine is appropriate for that size and weight of car. 1.5 liters is not appropriate for a 3,000-plus-pound family car.
Hmm. But yet, you actually like the car, other than the fact you're kind of concerned about the underpowered aspect of it.
Yeah, right? I particularly like it because it doesn't have a lot of the advanced safety features. You know, it's an older design, trying to remember when it was last significantly updated, but it's been at least 5 or 6 years, so it doesn't have lane keep assist, emergency braking, and all that stuff. You can get it, I think, optionally, but it doesn't come standard with it. has a relatively small touchscreen. It's just a car. You remember those?
Yeah.
You got in it, you turned it on, and you drove, and it didn't try to parent you. It's a very pleasant driving car. I just don't know how long-lived a car it's going to be because of this engine. And I think that, you know, Chevy is basically giving the finger to its own buyers, saying, look, this is all you get. If you want something else, you're going to have to get an electric car.
Well, remember the other guy I was telling you about, the mechanic, who was saying that the small 1.4 and 1.5s were blowing up.
Yeah.
In this, I think this might be an example of what is causing this. You're taking a small engine, you put a lot of turbo boost on it, and you're not going to get the longevity out of them that you would otherwise expect.
Yeah, you know, leaving aside the whole electric car agenda, I think probably part of this, too, is that the entire car industry has you know, realized that, you know, we were building some really good cars with V6 engines that would last for 15 or 20 years or even longer and 200,000-plus miles. Great examples of that being the Camry V6, the mm-hmm. Ford V6,
yep.
cars like that. And that's bad for them, isn't it? You know, they want you coming in every 7 or 8 years to get a new debt albatross hung around your neck. They don't want you buying a car and then owning it, having paid it off after 5 or 6 years, and then driving it for another 10 years.
But I don't think that the EV situation, given the cost, even when Joe Biden says, okay, we're going to give you a $7,500 tax credit,
yeah,
they just raised the price to $8,000, you know, on some of these cars.
Sure.
It's
and, you
just
know, and
sort
the,
of offsetting.
The price raise is also going to get you, again, when it comes time to replace that battery. The price of those things is not coming down. And you're talking about the equivalent in cost of having to replace the entire drivetrain, not just the engine, the entire drivetrain in a non-electric car. You're talking about close to $10,000 in most cases to put a new battery in an old EV.
And yet what you're talking about here is that the internal combustion vehicles we have right now are probably about as good as they've ever been. You know, I mean,
oh, there's no probably about it. It's an objective fact. You know, the cars I referenced, like the caller and his little Corolla and Camry and cars like that, just you can get in those things and drive them for the next 15 or 20 years and 250,000 plus miles, and they'll probably still be in good enough shape at the end of that time to hand it off to your teenage kid as their first car.
Yeah, clean, powerful, environmentally friendly. I mean, especially contrasted with the stuff we drove when we were kids, you know?
Sure. let's be real. Environmentally friendly in the fact that, look, you don't have to recycle the thing and buy a new one every 6 or 7 years as you do with these electric cars. You know, here's a car that will last for 15 or 20 years. And so during those 15 or 20 years, there's no more earth rape going on to get the raw materials and then to manufacture the car and all of the rest of it that goes into any vehicle. So, you know, if you compare the total lifetime emissions of these cars, they're actually less than the supposed non-emissions of these supposedly zero-emissions electric cars.
You know, Eric, I don't know if you've ever read James Howard Kunstler.
Yes, love the guy. Follows stuff all the time.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I mean, that guy wakes up dyspeptic every morning. You know, I think it's just the kind of the way he is. But he wrote a book, The Long Emergency.
Yes,
and
I have it.
And he keeps opining, and I think that he may have a case that as the empire teeters financially, and the United States empire as it is, certainly is, yeah, our dollar is strong right now. But, you know, how long are you going to continue to be able to pile up debt over debt over debt over
sure.
debt? And he says that one of the things that will end up happening, and most Americans haven't really thought much about it, is that the landfill economy, and he calls it the landfill economy, mm-hmm. in which everything is designed that you're supposed to destroy it every few years, throw it in the landfill, and buy a new one. He says that's going to go away because it'll have to. It's just not something which is a sustainable model. So I think that as you talk about what you can buy right now that will last forever versus, relatively speaking, you know, a lifetime and can be easily rebuilt and remanufactured versus what is hot and trendy right now and politically favored and will not and is expensive, I think we know what will end up winning in the long run. I really do.
I think we do, too, and I think we're going to see very soon.
Yeah, and this idea that you're just going to throw everything in the landfill forever and get a new one, it's probably not going to work. Appreciate the call.
No, and, you know, people who are genuinely concerned about environmental issues really ought to give some consideration to that fact. Again, you know, talking about the 1,000-plus pounds of batteries, and in a truck like the electric F-150, it's closer to 2,000 pounds of these toxic Earth-unfriendly materials that are going to get thrown in the proverbial landfill. They should think about that.
Yeah, indeed. Think beyond just what the conditioning has been, all right? And you can read about this and so much more. Car reviews, great listener questions answered and reader questions answered. epautos.com. Eric, always a great talk on Wheels Up Wednesday. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Great stuff, Bill. Thanks for having me on.